listening to the B Fox and B Frank show. This is our first episode that will have both football and basketball, so get excited about that. The basketball season is not a lot to pull from so far, but there are plenty of losers, so there's more than enough to fill that segment. First, of course, we look at the week that was in college football. Week 11, we are getting down to it. There were some events that transpired, and we will get to there. First, we have to start. Texas is almost back, but they are not quite back. Final update. There's still a couple games to go, but for now, not back. TCU, however, still undefeated. A game that, I think ended up taking a different route than most expected coming into this week. A 17-10 final for TCU. Just 199 yards of offense for Texas. Very impressive showing for TCU, slowing down, especially the Longhorn run game. For comparison's sake, TCU able to run the ball much more effectively. Might have been the difference in this game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. For all that we can say about TCU's defense slowing down Texas's run game, the Longhorns did the same to the passing attack for TCU. Quentin Johnson, just 3 catches, 66 yards, 124 total passing yards for Max Duggan, but he did get a touchdown, and that proved to be the difference in this game. If you would have told a lot of people that it was 3-0 going into the half, I don't think anyone would have believed you, because it's just not the way this game was supposed to play out. And sure enough, here we are seeing incredibly low scoring game throughout. Thinking, most of the time I thought that there was some sort of mistake with the score bug that was showing the game, but it was 10-3 going into the fourth quarter, and Texas really never looked too threatening in this game.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Texas defense. You know, like you said, this is a TCU offense that has been rolling, especially the passing game. But yeah, Texas did a really good job up front of, you know, getting consistent pressure on Max Duggan every time he drops back to pass. And obviously, the less time he had, the less time he could find Johnston downfield. They did make the connection for that one touchdown. But I mean, All things considered, you will take the defensive effort that Steve Sarkisian's team showed, just unable to put it all together.
Each team saw the box score prior to the game, I think they both think they're winning that, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you certainly just show half of it and what the other team is able to do offensively, because yeah, this was seemingly there for the taking, but Quinn Ewers just did not get it done, did not have a good game himself, obviously not helped at all by the run game, but this has kind of seemingly been the way that Texas's season has gone. When Texas has won, he has looked really good. When they have lost, he has looked pedestrian, sometimes actively bad. It's not a good game, only completing 17 out of his 39 pass attempts. Obviously, not a lot of yardage, as we discussed, and no touchdowns to speak of. So a forgettable day at the office for him and this Texas offense. Just another close call. And I mean, this is just, it's not a program that accepts moral victories, but that's really all we have from the season at this point.
Yeah, Ewers has not had more than 20 completions since the demolition of Oklahoma in week 3 or 4, whichever one it was. Since then, 17, 19, 18, and 17 completions, ranging from 39% completion percentage up to 65%. That was against Iowa State, who is a noted bad football team.
Yeah, it's not great. It is not great. I mean, it's very much a boom or bust offense a lot of shots downfield that don't end up doing anything. So at the end of the day, you know, TCU is able to take that away pretty well. Able to take away the run game. Not much else to fall on if you're Texas. But again, TCU still undefeated. The Big 12's great hope to bust down the doors and get into this playoff, because otherwise there's a real possibility that this would be all SEC Big Ten. So the Big 12's kind of the last hope from the outsiders, especially due to another result we're about to get to. They've been able to kind of navigate some difficult situations, win a bunch of close calls. They faced a lot of backup quarterbacks. So interesting route to get here. Very good football team. They just kind of have to keep riding the wave at this point.
Got to win the games in front of you. We've said that about Coastal. We've said about UCF, and now it rings true again.
Speaking of another playoff contender, surprise playoff contender at this point in the season based on how it started and now kind of back off the pace. Oregon falling 37-34 to Washington in a good old-fashioned shootout. Bo Nix had some good numbers, down numbers for him, which is just, again, wild to say every time we reflect on what a season he's had. But my man, Michael Penix, the nation's leading passer, he showed up, he showed out, and Peyton Henry is the hero at the end, but a huge win for Washington as they move to 8-2 on the season.
Big plays and a timely turnover, just a ridiculous audible into a formation, into a fumbled snap, into a turnover for Oregon really cost them the game as they were about to score in the, I can't remember if it was the second or third quarter at this point, but yeah, Bo Nix looked good. Michael Penix was better. Big plays really helped Washington's offense. They had touchdown passes of 76 and 62 yards from Penix, and both of them came at huge points to give them the lead back and tie the game respectively. And the latter of the two, 62-yard touchdown, tied it up with 3 minutes left, and then defense holds on, and you get a field goal, and that's the ball game. So credit to Washington. This was an Oregon team that we all – I talked about it as one of the best, one of the hottest teams in the country, behind one of the best and one of the hottest quarterbacks in the country. The defense did not show up like they did against UCLA, or at least did not make the plays in the red zone like they needed to this week. And it shows in a 3-point loss.
Yeah. Oregon's red zone defense was pretty darn good against UCLA. Just the defense as a whole kind of took on the bend it, but don't break mindset.
Yeah.
Here, not so much. I mean, Washington got 9.2 yards per play.
Yeah.
Like, that's just ridiculous. And honestly, like, Oregon wasn't terrible in the red zone. The problem was you're just giving up big plays outside of the red zone, you know, rendering red zone defense moot. So, I mean, this is a Washington offense that has showed flashes of brilliance. You know, when they've been on, they've really been on. You know, we thought Michigan State was a better team than the Spartans actually are, but that was kind of the coming out party, everything clicking, very much the same here. You know, maybe fewer touchdowns for Penix, but still over 400 yards passing. Again, most yards out of anyone in the FBS. I mean, just the reunion with Kalen DeBoer is kind of everything we thought it could be. These are just both guys at their best. And yeah, I mean, Oregon's defense just couldn't get a stop. And that's got to be a continuing frustration for Dan Lanning, a defensive guy. The offense is a ton of fun, but again, the defense not really providing much of anything this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Brent Venables' problem over at Oklahoma, just to a lesser level, because Oregon is obviously playing good football and Oklahoma is absolutely not at this point. But the opposite problem is their strength, or that they're each having problems in their strength area. 11.7 yards per pass attempt is just outrageous for Washington. And then when you see Oregon has 10 yards per pass attempt and still loses, that is pretty wild. So great offensive game, really a lot of fun. Unfortunately for the Pac-12, as good a game as it was and as good a viewing atmosphere as it was, it really hurts the conference.
That it does. We have known for a long time and definitely did not realize right before we started recording there are no divisions in Pac-12 football
correct
going forward. So you know, this would be an interesting game in the old Pac-12 North, as it would have brought Washington just a game within Oregon. It still does that. They are a game apart. Washington is in a tight jumble with UCLA just one game behind in the loss column of USC, Oregon, and Utah. So you know, we're going to find out a lot this weekend. Both ranked matchups involve Pac-12 teams. But in the larger scale of things for the playoff, this is pretty much it. USC is still technically the one team alive. They have an opportunity this weekend to get another ranked win. But it seems like a situation where they will need a decent amount of help to get in, and obviously have to win all their remaining games as well. So, you know, the Pac-12 trying to do away with divisions to help themselves in the national picture. It does not appear to be doing that this year.
Yeah, I will get to it in our losers section, spoiler alert, but there is some fun stuff that can happen where this actively screws them over.
Nice. Alabama, Ole Miss, little push to the side this week just based on how the teams have been doing the last couple weeks. Alabama ended up coming back from a 17-7 deficit, winning this 30-24. Bryce Young is good at football, and some days that's really all Alabama needs. But this was a very strong performance from him. He's kind of been forgotten at times this season. It's because the numbers he's put up aren't as ridiculous as we've seen from him. But this was a very strong performance. And, I mean, Alabama was able to lock down Ole Miss for the second half of that game.
Yeah, it looked like we were about to get a runaway train here, the lane train getting the boys going down in Mississippi, and it just never ended up happening. Run game looked good for Ole Miss. Jackson Dart was okay throwing the ball, not terrible, but it really came down to just Bryce Young's ability to make plays, and we've talked about it at length. Alabama doesn't have the same star power in the wide receiver room as they usually do, but he is finding ways to get these guys open and help them make these big plays. Ja'Cory Brooks, a big touchdown catch. Cameron Latu has struggled this year, definitely struggled last week, but was able to grab a touchdown this week, and confidence builds. So when Bryce Young is looking your way and throwing you the ball, that's going to build the confidence, and I think that's all the Alabama receivers need at this point. They're not going to be these game-breaking players like we've seen the past couple of years, but they are obviously, you know, they're at Alabama. They are good enough to be the difference in a game like this.
Yeah, you're really not going to see games like we have the last couple of years where Bryce Young is throwing for 400, 450 yards. I mean, he barely broke 200 in this one. And it being a lot more efficient, less reliant on the big play and just kind of marching down the field, taking what the defense gives you, converting third downs, which they did at very key moments. And then, I mean, just hoping that's enough. It's weird because this is still a top 10 team, but we're talking about them like they're struggling to reach bowl eligibility. It's just the standard that Nick Saban has set at Alabama is so ridiculously high, and just all these different permutations of what the brand, what the culture is there. You know, they were all about defense with a rotating cast of the same guy at quarterback, just with a different name on the back of his jersey. Then they were all offense with a great defense. Now they're kind of waters finding level a little bit. You know, their teams are making them work each and every week. But all that being said, they could very easily be undefeated. They lost on a field goal at the horn to Tennessee. They lost in a 2-point conversion at the end to LSU. This is not a bad football team, but it's almost like they have to try a little more than what the last couple of years have been like. But big win for Alabama here, bouncing back after the crushing loss to LSU.
They needed it. Staying alive now.
You know, Auburn is looking for a coach right now. There's a pretty good one in Central Florida that might want to take a flyer on. His name is Gus Malzahn, and his Knights beat Tulane in the battle for first place in the American, 38-31, 468 yards of offense for the Knights. That is the most Tulane has given up in a game this season. The Gus bus is back, and it's rolling.
It is rolling. John Reese Plumlee has been awesome this year. He was great again in this game. 67-yard touchdown run was big in every shape of the word, but that really opened up the game, got them started hot, 10-0 lead, and they really never looked back. It got up to 24-7, and then Tulane second-half team really started to come alive, but too little too late is the word I was looking for there, the phrase I was looking for there. The run game is just absurd for UCF. 336 yards on the ground in this one. Dominant performance, and they have so many different guys that can hurt you in this game.
Yeah, Plumlee had just over half of that all by himself, and when he's on, he's very difficult to defend. He's always kind of been more of a runner first and a passer. I mean, the numbers will bear that out. Still tried 30 passes in this game, but first and foremost, you have to stop his legs. But yeah, I think Malzahn is using him really well in this offense, and it seems to be getting better and better each week. Two very big wins over the last several weeks over Cincinnati and now Tulane, kind of the two main competitors atop the American. And now, I mean, UCF's sitting pretty. They're obviously not an undefeated team looking to go to the playoff, but they're the only team that has knocked off Cincinnati and Tulane in conference. You know, it's basically take care of business from here on out, and they'll make it to the championship game. So have to be feeling great. And I mean, again, just on a personal level, it's got to feel great for Gus looking at the turmoil happening at Auburn. And yeah, he's just winning football games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who is your big winner for week 11?
Week 11's big winner. We're heading to the Music City, Nashville, Vanderbilt. First SEC win since 2019. They knock off Kentucky. Just a great moment overall. Vanderbilt needed a win, especially with how the basketball team has started the season, and they got it. So credit to Vanderbilt. They're 4-6. They're chasing bowl eligibility. It would take a miracle. They got to beat Florida, and then they got to beat Tennessee. But never say never.
Stranger things have happened. All right, so my winner is Washington. We talked about them. We'll skip over that because my big loser is Kentucky. So we took different approaches of this, different sides of the same coin. I am perpetually a glass half empty sort of guy. So from Kentucky's perspective, you allowed Vanderbilt to march down the field and score in the final minute to snap a 26-game SEC losing streak. Also, I think that the nation has gotten a little better about this, but I'm still seeing tweets from time to time looking at potential first-round quarterbacks. Will Levis against Vanderbilt was 11 for 23, 109 yards, and a pick. So let's chill out a little bit, please.
Yeah.
I think that's been my main soapbox this year, I think. It's mostly tongue-in-cheek, and now just say it. Like, if you are putting Will Levis in the same conversation as some of these other guys who are actually very, very, very productive in college, let's not do that.
Agreed.
We don't need more Christian Hackenberg, Zach Mettenbergers in the world. But yeah, not a good week at all for Kentucky. But fortunately, you know, Vanderbilt's a tough opponent. You need a get right game coming up next. They get Georgia, so good luck there.
Ready.
But yeah, that's a game that, I mean, I follow certain members of Big Blue Nation, and it was a rough Saturday, to be sure. When you lose to Vanderbilt, it's really look in the mirror time, and you're kind of giving up on the season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Let's keep the Will Levis number one pick talk out of the broadcast from now on, ESPN. I am actually interested now to see what they do this week against Georgia. It's on CBS, so I don't think Gary or Brad will mention it, but still a possibility.
You can't, like, you would just have to willingly ignore things that happen on the football field.
Is he downgraded to just first round pick? Potential first round pick?
Yeah, I think he still could. I mean, that's tough though. Like, that's one CBS was definitely thinking, all right, Kentucky will at least beat Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I mean, the good news is there's not a great game that, you know, they'd be upset about missing out on. But yeah, definitely. They're definitely a little annoyed that some of the juice is gone there.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot in terms of ranked games in week 12, but we've got two in the same conference that really will help to unclog the aforementioned mess at the top of the Pac-12 standings. We start the battle for LA, USC, UCLA. Again, I don't know why it's not the last game of the year, but that's how scheduling. I think USC has Notre Dame now, so I mean, I won't complain too much, but still,
yeah.
Come on. USC, as we mentioned, really the only Pac-12 team that still has a playoff shot here. This win would go a long way for Lincoln Riley and the Trojans. Do you think they pull it off?
I do, because if they don't, the Pac-12 is truly destroyed. But there is a possibility that UCLA, who has lost to Arizona, can still get into the conference championship game, and that would be an absolute disaster for the conference. So getting rid of these divisions has really hurt them in that regard. But I think USC, gets it done. It's going to be high scoring. I think this is going to be similar to what we saw with Washington and Oregon. I think it's going to be similar to what we saw with UCLA and Oregon. I think points are going to be on the board and on the board fast. And it's which defense can get more stops is going to win this game.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm not really confident in either defense. You know, yeah. UCLA's especially was not great against Arizona last week. Just a real gut punch of a loss. And the offense, DTR was not his usual amazing self. Charbonnet still showed out. He's just an absolute monster. I mean, the inability to, you know, even break the 30-point barrier against a defense that has been as bad as Arizona's this year is concerning. But I like the Bruins to bounce back here. I think ultimately DTR...
home field advantage, right?
Yeah. I mean, USC is traveling. Future Big Ten rivals coming together. So a lot at stake here.
Hopefully Big Ten West for your sake.
I mean, they just need to do away with division. If there was a conference that needs to get rid of them, because like the SEC East is at least good now, but the Big Ten, just what are we doing here?
Just bring back legends and leaders and make it like a relegation promotion thing.
See, that's the thing. Like the names were ridiculous, but legends and leaders divisions were actually very even.
They're balanced.
That was, yeah, which is a novel concept. But yeah, that was better. I would support that. But alas, you know, basic geography. You just need to move Purdue a little bit to the east, and then we can swap them and everyone will be happy. But anyway, I agree. I think it'll be a shootout against basically whoever has the ball last. But we've seen a lot of strange things in the Pac-12 this year. It's a better conference than people expected, which is disheartening to hear if you're a member or fan of the Pac-12, because you're still going to be on the outside looking in. But like, I'm trying to say that without being like patronizing, but it is a good conference, but you're not going to make the playoff probably. But yeah, UCLA wins here, finalizes that. And we've got some chaos or some more chaos going forward before the Pac-12 championship game.
I think this is the second time this year that I put the Pac-12 as my loser. So that tells you the state of the league.
They get our expectations up and then let us down. Like it was quite the journey to get back to this point where they could be considered a disappointment or a loser. So again, credit to the Pac-12 for that.
It counts.
The other game is Utah against Oregon. Would have been a top 10 matchup most likely if Oregon had taken care of business. They did not, so it's only a top 15 matchup. Another home game for the Ducks did not really help them out last time, but will that make a difference for them against Utah here?
I think so. I'm going to take Oregon. I think it's going to be a tight game. Probably a little lower scoring. I think it's going to be, you know, 31-28 range of a ball game, but Utah has struggled on the road. They are 2-2. Their losses at Florida, at UCLA. Noted home field advantage, as I referred to earlier, at UCLA. Just a raucous crowd there, really gets into it and loves their Bruins. But Utah has that mark on their resume right now. They have struggled on the road, and I think that Oregon bounces back and gets right. Bo Nix, like you said, he wasn't necessarily at fault for the loss last week. He played pretty well, just not as well as he has been. I think he bounces back, plays a better game. Defense shapes up a little bit. Dan Lanning obviously going to make some changes on the defensive side of the ball, and that should help them. Cam Rising would have to play a masterful game if Utah were to win.
Yeah, it's just a weird place for me to be right now because, yeah, like you said, Utah has been disappointing in certain spots. You know, UCLA, obviously a good team, but you would think...
Yeah.
With all the hype that Utah came to the season with, that would have been one they could handle. I love Utah. I've been very open about this, but I'm like, the more reliable thing in this situation seems like it is Bo Nix. And it's just terrifying. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills with just how this season has progressed. But yeah, I like Oregon in a bounce back spot here. I think both these games are going to be very close, I think. So something to look forward to is really Pac-12 takes center stage right as they fall out of the potentially playoff picture. I like Bo Nix and Oregon to bounce back here. No one has been able to stop the offense. It's really, can you outscore them?
Yeah.
And Washington was able to do that. So there's a lot that Utah can look for, especially if Oregon goes with any similar defensive looks, because Michael Penix just picked apart that zone defense. But yeah, I like Bo Nix to put up some numbers here against a good Utah defense that just has not traveled well this year. So give me the Ducks. All right, that will do it for football. Basketball, we are, as of tonight, Monday, as we're recording, we are now a week into the season. Things have happened. People have been embarrassed. Not a lot of teams have boosted their stock too much compared to how much some stock has fallen. But we start with winners. So who's been kind of your winner of the first week of the season?
I am giving it to St. Mary's. The Gaels have played really just great basketball throughout the start of this season. They are the 11th ranked team in terms of defensive efficiency on KenPom, 3-0 with wins over Oral Roberts, Vermont, and North Texas. May not mean a lot to some people, but those are three teams that should be in the hunt for an NCAA tournament bid in each of their respective conferences. And they absolutely dominated North Texas. I think they held them to 33 points, getting the stat department on it now to make sure. But yeah, just stifling defense. Randy Bennett's team has looked really good to start this season. Yeah, 33 points.
They are going to be incredibly frustrating to play against all year. And yeah, like that, those teams don't necessarily jump off the page compared to, you know, you look at like Michigan State schedule, but those are all potentially tournament teams. And those were one going away. They're still going to pound the hell out of the rock. They're like, I think they're benefiting a little bit by how many teams keep joining Division I. They're not quite last. That is still Virginia, but they are right there in terms of slowest tempos. They just defend like crazy and are very efficient with limited opportunities. They're just a tough team to score on. And I mean, this is very important for the West Coast. We keep hearing more about Gonzaga and all of its suitors. BYU is leaving. So it's possible that St. Mary's becomes a standard bearer for the conference rather than just being an at-large team every year. So this is a very, very good start to the season against pretty strong competition. There was an opportunity to look at this as a big loser, but I'm going to go glass half full here. I already did glass half empty. I'm going to say the SWAC.
Yes.
The SWAC have embarrassed the Pac-12, so we thank them for their service, but the Pac-12 SWAC Legacy Series, there is still one more game to be played, but the SWAC have won two out of the four games so far. Texas Southern, who always seems like they are good for an early season upset, dispatched Arizona State and an increasingly hot-seated Bobby Hurley in overtime. Grambling beats Colorado by 9. Colorado turns around and dominates Tennessee. So that win looks excellent. And then Arkansas Pine Bluff, this was the one that got away, but
yeah,
just we're in control for almost all of that game against TCU, just gets away from them at the end. So a great performance that ultimately does not show up in the win column, but TCU team that returns everyone is very high on in the preseason and gave them quite a scare on opening night. The closest anyone was to knocking off a ranked team on night one. So shout out the SWAC for greatly exceeding expectations early on.
Yeah, Arkansas Pine Bluff, they played four games. They gave Oklahoma hell. They lost that one by 8. And then Mississippi State blew them out. They probably ran out of gas a little bit. But this is, you know, the SWAC, not an easy league. Definitely something to pay attention to as we go through the year. Normally, you see Texas Southern kind of run away with this. But, yeah, Alcorn State also beat Wichita on the road. That was another big win for the conference.
And I think to your point, it can't really be understated how much the non-conference slate is a grind for some of these low major schools where you mm-hmm. are just exclusively on the road against like Power Six teams. And so you kind of, I know this is really highlighted with Texas Southern a few years ago. They played yeah. like their first 12 on the road against Power Six teams or something like that. But yeah, it's a lot. And, you know, they were obviously the freshest against TCU before, you know, it's tough to bring that every night against the physicality you're going up against. But I mean, for the league as a whole, very, very competitive showing. And yeah, I mean, beating Wichita is nothing to scoff at either. So that's my big winner so far. We're talking about the SWAC week one. So that feels like a good thing.
Don't look now, but Grambling has at Grand Canyon next later this week. And then they have at Arizona State. If Bobby Hurley loses to two SWAC teams, does he get fired on the spot?
Possible. I think
I got think we're on the spot this year. Are we in yeah. for two Arizona State head coaches to get fired?
Oh, yeah, that could be the brand now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's possible. I'm open to the possibility.
They also have a weird schedule quirk where they play Incarnate Word twice in a week.
Nice.
We'll see what Grambling can do.
Yeah. One of those has to be a tournament, right?
I'd imagine, yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, yeah, that's nanners. That's like a COVID scheduling when
right.
I forget who it was. A couple teams in the Northeast were playing each other like 8 times.
Gotta get the games in.
Yeah. All right. Who's your loser from the first week?
It's the Pac-12. Like we talked about, the Pac-12 is my loser in football and basketball. The rare double crown for the league. Some numbers to go through the Power Six real quick. The ACC was 24-6. The Big 12 was 19-2. The Big East was 20-1. Shout out Villanova. Big 10 was 28-1. They really should have been 29-0. Gonzaga should have lost to Michigan State in that game. SEC 26-4. And our dear friends on the West Coast in the Pac-12, 18-8 in week one. Arizona State lost to Texas Southern. Oregon lost to UC Irvine. USC loses to Florida Gulf Coast. Shout out Andy Enfield for still playing his former school over a decade later. Colorado loses to Grambling. Cal loses to UC Davis and Kansas State. That's a lesser loss, but I'm still going to name them all. Washington State loses to Boise State. And then Stanford loses to Wisconsin at former Miller Park or Farmers Bank, whatever the hell it is now, in a baseball stadium. So all in all, a very tough week for the Pac-12. If you or yet again, it seems that they are going to be the worst of the power conferences for I don't know how many years in a row this is, but it seems like consistent.
Yeah. So quick note, you shouted out Villanova there. They're losing to Temple. They are down at halftime to Delaware State as we are recording this.
Folks, so, folks,
it is concerning, but. Yeah, I had two losers. We'll get to the bigger one momentarily, but I did want to call out Oregon. You know, some of those other teams kind of lacking in the expectations department. The USC one, I think, is just funny because it is Dunk City, but
it's outrageous.
Oregon blown out at home by UC Irvine, who has been to the tournament in recent history, but not a ton of expectations this year. Certainly not to the level where they just dominated this game again at Oregon. And it's bringing back a lot of reminders of last season where Oregon struggled out of the gate, got absolutely hammered in a couple of games. One especially bad blowout loss to Houston. And it seemed like all season they were trying to climb back to that point, got a little bit of buzz in February, and then that fell off as well. This year, it seemed like Dana Altman was going to come in and right the ship. Like, last year is an aberration, such an outlier. It's normally so consistent. This concerns me. Are we potentially going to see some of these same struggles we did last year? I mean, just came out of nowhere. And it's a team, some were saying, could contend to win the Pac-12. Obviously still possible. They haven't played conference games yet. But this is a troubling data point, as the selection committee would say, because this will be probably best case a Q3 loss.
Yeah, you're lucky if it gets to that level.
Yeah,
really tough overall. But I one of my other teams that was a loser last week was Florida State. Stetson is beating South Florida on the road right now. Is Stetson the best team in the state of Florida? People are asking.
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say Miami, but it's I will entertain the Hatters. I mean, maybe Florida, but I think I'm going to say Miami right now. It is certainly not Florida State. We can agree on that.
Yeah, they had a tough open to the season. They lost to UCF and then they lost to Stetson. Lenny's boys are not looking great right now.
This is kind of the same thing you're saying about Oregon. Like last year was.
Yeah.
Seemingly such an outlier. They'd been so consistent, you know, like top four or five in the ACC every season. And then last year was a disaster. I mean, this is an even worse start. So I don't know. It's not good vibes. At least football season is actually going well for the first time in forever. So that is giving a little bit of cover for the basketball program struggles. But
yeah,
once the season's over and people have to take note of what's happening, you would hope they have turned it around by then, but how they're playing against this level of competition is not encouraging, shall we say.
It's early in this game. There's 9 minutes left in the first half, but Florida is losing to Florida Atlantic right now. So who knows what is going on in that state?
Yeah, I don't know. We need to shut it down until we figure out what the heck is going on.
Agreed.
But I mean, just small sample size, but the thing that really sticks out so far about Florida State is just they have not been able to defend at the level we're used to under Leonard Hamilton. You know, some of the best teams, you know, not necessarily offensively gifted in terms of shooting. They've been some very good teams, but mostly the brand under Hamilton has been, we're going to have a lot of length on the perimeter. We're going to have a lot of height inside, and we're just going to make everything extremely difficult. Every pass, every shot to get off. We haven't seen that so far. And I mean, that's the biggest weakness that they would need to address as soon as possible.
They got to figure something out. Troy, then Florida, and that. Who knows what the game against the Gators will be like, but at this rate, it is going to be very interesting to see these two play.
Yeah, that it will. My big loser, we've talked about them a bit already, but it has to be Kenny Payne, Louisville Cardinals.
Yeah.
I think it could get worse before it gets better, which is not great, but I mean, we talked about this when we talked about a loss to Lenoir Rhines. We were kind of previewing the eighth. I mean, it's L. Ellis. He is the guard on the roster.
Singular.
It's been like, I don't know how this happens in the year of our Lord 2022, but yeah, it's a team that just looks lost at times offensively. You know, they did well to kind of come back a bit against Bellarmine, but I mean that came up short. They lost in a buzzer beater to Wright State. It's just the offense, when you kind of held up how Bellarmine is running its offense, like a lot of possessions not even dribbling, just crisp passing and cutting, and then what Louisville looks like, it's just night and day. And then Wright State, you come out, it's like, this is what happens when you do not have ball handlers, lead guards. You have 9 assists, 19 turnovers. Like it's just not a winning combination. And again, the ACC has its struggles as well. You know, there are teams that don't look especially great, but I don't see anyone that I would have confidence in Louisville beating. Maybe Florida State, just based on the sample size, but I have a little more confidence that by conference season, they will look better. Louisville,
yeah,
I don't have that same hope.
Louisville, so I had to check the schedule. They do have a win on the schedule this year, thank God, for Kenny Payne's sake. Thank God. They beat Chaminade by 7 at home. So, yeah, I guess good thing Chaminade is no longer in Maui, or they're not going to Maui, either or, but they at least have a win on the schedule. App State is next. Then, they are going to Maui, and they get Arkansas.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be ugly. That week will be ugly. Yeah, this was not the year that Louisville probably wanted to be in. Maui, and also just losing out on Wagner to Kentucky with the start to the season that they've had, just kind of insult to injury. So yeah, the vibes are not great in Tallahassee. Vibes are not great in Louisville either. Vibes are not great in much of the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Conversely, like you said, I think best case for a lot of teams is just keeping the status quo. I don't think anyone has really elevated themselves that much. We're just seeing some very bad Power Six basketball from certain programs. So exciting stuff. Yeah,
I'd agree. The only other team I need to throw under the bus is someone we already mentioned, and that's Oklahoma. They lost to Sam Houston State at home and struggled with Arkansas Pine Bluff. Like, it's a little early to say I told you so, but I feel like I told everyone that the Porter Moser experiment in Oklahoma was going to be a failure.
Yeah, this is the year. But I mean, that's the thing with like transfer portal and how quickly you can theoretically build a roster. The leash gets very short. Last year can kind of see like, you know, just getting there, acclimating to Big 12 life. They were right around 500, but somehow were in contention or in the conversation at least for a tournament bid almost until the end of the year. This year, they're really not going to get any excuses or benefit of the doubts. I don't think anyone's really talking about them as a contender in the Big 12, talking about almost everyone else in the conference. So you're not taking care of business in the non-conference either. That does not really bode well. So some important weeks ahead for the Sooners before we get into conference play. All right, we've got some bigger games coming up this week. We've got the Champions Classic, and then we'll lead into Feast Week and some other big non-conference matchups. The first week didn't really give us much of that, so that's something we're looking forward to. We will have that to discuss next week, another week of college football. Check out the spread option coming out later this week, and we will see you here next time.